Hello, everybody, and welcome to our first episode for 2023. I am Christopher Beljanovski, and joining me as always is the man, the myth, the legend, Toasty.
Toasty!
If something sounds a little off, I'm just letting you know that I'm feeling a little under the weather right now. But as they say, the show must go on. We're super excited to get into today's episode, so Toasty, take it away.
Welcome back to another great episode today. For all the people that grew up with Mortal Kombat Conquest, today is a memorable one. The show was filled to the brim with a slew of talented, stunning women. Attached to the show were a number of new female combatants that were very rich in character and stood out strongly for the viewers. One warrior in particular, who has always held the spotlight while also being a fan favorite, is Omegis. With her unpredictable behavior, alluring appearance, deadly fighting prowess, and abilities in the dark arts, she was instantly a hit amongst the fans. Kamidogu is proud to announce that we are joined by the one and only Angelica Bridges. Angelica not only played this memorable role, but is also widely recognized around the globe for playing Taylor Walsh in NBC's Baywatch. Success has come her way more than once, as she's also a singer, modeled in Playboy, excelled in culinary arts, and so much more. We are thrilled to have her join us today, and so with that being said, let's continue over to the interview. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and here we are, joined with the beautiful Angelica Bridges, who played the character Omegis. It's such a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, to start off today's interview, why don't you tell us how you originally fell into acting work and how you ultimately received the role of Omegis in MK Conquest?
So, I grew up in a really small town in Missouri. I come from a town with 150 people. So I'm a really, really, really small town girl. So I had a lot of time being, you know, living out in the country on a ranch to use my imagination and try to find things to do to entertain myself, being so far, you know, out in the boondocks. So I would just, you know, with the limited television that we had out there, just, I would watch Gilligan's Island. And I remember, you know, watching Ginger Grant on that show. And I just thought, gosh, I want to be like Ginger Grant. This looks so incredible. I love this character. You know, I want to do this someday. So with that kind of being an inspiration of watching Ginger and living out in the country, just creating, you know, these characters in my free time. And, you know, we didn't have all this internet and social media back then. So, you had to be creative. So I just had a lot of dreaming and, you know, visualizing what I wanted my future to be as soon as I could, you know, get out of that small town, which I did eventually. Like at 18, I moved to Hollywood, and I was going to UCLA for communications, but I auditioned for a girls' singing group that was going to tour in Asia at the time, but going to school. So when I got this contract to be a backup singer in this group and touring Asia, I dropped out of UCLA because it was just instant, you know, well, I had to be gone for 3 months at a time. And so that was kind of my first big break once I did move to LA, was the singing, was actually being a backup singer. And then from there, I was discovered while singing by John Casablancas, who was the president of Elite Modeling Agency. So he said, you know, he was in the audience and I was singing at Universal Studios in Orlando, which is actually the same place that I shot Mortal Kombat, as how funny that is. But I was singing, he saw me on stage, he said, you need to be with Elite. And then I started modeling with the Elite Agency and traveling the world. And then from modeling, then I started doing commercials. And then from getting commercials, I auditioned for my first role, which was Days of Our Lives. It was a soap opera in the US. And it was a recurring role, but I ended up booking that role. And then from there, I auditioned for Baywatch a short time after getting this Days of Our Lives, which I was on Baywatch. And then from Baywatch, I think I got on the radar probably of Larry Kasanoff, who was producing Mortal Kombat, and was, you know, sent over to audition for a role on the TV show Mortal Kombat. And then once I got you know, to his studios in Santa Monica, and of course I loved the role when I got the script and the character, I just thought, oh my gosh, this, you know, this is the most incredible role that I would probably enjoy more than any role I've ever done. So I really was excited about the audition, and once I auditioned, and then I got the call back, and then I ended up booking Omegis, and then traveling to Orlando again, but this time to shoot Mortal Kombat. I wasn't singing. That's kind of how, you know, it all kind of became. I mean, obviously there was a few years in between all of this. That was a 0 to 60 story, but you know, it was just literally coming from a small town, dreaming big, wanting to go straight to Hollywood and conquer it, and going to LA, trying to study, you know, once I got there at the same time, but then just getting pushed into entertainment rather quickly, and just dropped everything else. And then, I mean, the rest is history pretty much. It happened pretty fast once I arrived to LA. It was pretty amazing. Yeah,
I mean, how much of a contrast was it going from, you know, soaps like Days of Our Lives to Baywatch, you know, being a lifeguard, and then suddenly you're thrust into this crazy world where you play, you know, a character like Omegis? What was that like?
Well, it was interesting because with the soap opera, you know, I didn't realize how many pages of dialogue that you learn each day. And I think that was the big, big, big surprise for a soap opera, is learning all that, you know, having all those, it's many, 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 many pages. Whereas if you go on the set of Baywatch or you're on a different show that's not soap opera based, you have, you know, like a week, you have a script for a week, you're looking at your lines, you know, you're one of many characters, even though an episode might be, you know, you might be an episode more than another time, another episode, depending on the episode. It depends, right? So that was a big difference, is just, you know, a daytime soap opera with all of the dialogue and how many pages to learn and memorize. Whereas Baywatch or even Mortal Kombat, you have time to look at the dialogue. It's not just, you know, burning out pages in one day, you know, shooting that much dialogue. You know, I prefer to be on, you know, a show that you have time, you don't have that much dialogue, and you're not just trying to do so many pages per day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Big difference. And is it true that you were actually a bit of a Mortal Kombat fan before taking on Conquest?
No, I actually, well, I mean, obviously the movie was amazing, but I wasn't like, you know, a diehard person. I wasn't, you know, like studying it or looking at it in magazines or going online at the time, you know, and just trying to get more information. I think it was more of seeing the film and saying, wow, this is really amazing. And so then when I heard, oh, they're doing a TV show from the film, they're going to turn that film into many episodes and who knows how many seasons, right? So it was really, really intriguing to hear that Larry was doing that. And I think it was amazing that he did that, because it only prolonged, you know, what fans saw from the film, And then it just extended, and you could do so many more storylines, and then we could then go into the characters and really, really explore, like, as he did and he wanted to do, the characters and their backgrounds and where they originated, and just see them evolve in a series was quite cool.
Yeah,
absolutely, and I think that's one of the biggest highlights of Mortal Kombat is just, quite frankly, the lore. You know, it's really expanded over the years, and the concept alone of a television show is just incredible. So it was nice to see that it really was a smash hit. You know, those 22 episodes were huge. Larry, from what I understand, had actually envisioned it to be multiple seasons, and there is some photographs that are still saved from the Mortal Kombat official website that shows a slight timeline of how it was supposed to go. It's very, very intriguing. And, you know, even to this day, they're talking about branching off, with the new movie. So we'll see where that goes. Now, as you've said, Omegis was basically a dream role for you. Obviously some things were set in stone, from the writers and so forth for her character. However, was there anything specifically that you brought forward to this character that was from your own, artistic take? For instance, did you have any input towards some of the costume designs, particular dialogue, or how she may act in a certain scene, etc.?
As per costumes, no, they were so specific when it came to the costumes. And frankly, the costumes were amazing. I mean, at least for the women, you know, maybe the male actors and characters, you know, were kind of basic for, but for me, wow, I think I probably Larry getting together, you know, with the costume designer and coming up with these amazing, you know, very little, leaves little to the imagination. at the time was totally fine. I had no problem at all with, you know, obviously coming from Baywatch where it was a one piece bathing suit. The costumes in Mortal Kombat were very sexy and, you know, a fantasy, if you will. It's a very fantasy driven costumes. And so when I would arrive on set, you know, it was like, okay, this is what you're wearing. This is what, and I was like, great, it's fine. I'm down. I love it, because obviously they did take time and thought and, artistic, you know, artistic collaboration to come up with my costumes. Right. So I appreciated it very much. I thought they were amazing. And, you know, I think in regards to any spin that I put on my character, I think probably I wanted this character, you know, looking back, I wanted her to be, seem like she had several personalities. And that definitely wasn't written. It wasn't put in there of like, oh, she is a schizophrenic, or she's, you know, a psychopath, or she has split personalities. No, there was none of that in the breakdown of the character. But I think I wanted her to, you know, I just wanted you to feel like when you were watching her Omegis or listening to the dialogue, you just didn't know what she was going to do the next minute, or if she would be sexy, or if she would, you know, take a switchblade and cut your throat in 1 second, or crack a joke. You know, I really wanted her to be really, you know, just unstable, if you will, where you just didn't know what she was going to come up with next.
Well, I definitely got... I get that. I think you're going to say the same thing as me, but I definitely got that impression. Yeah. Like, every time you were on screen, there was this presence where you were kind of like, all right, what's she going to do now? You know, what's happening? I don't know.
That first episode when you were with Paolo Montalban, in Mortal Kombat episode 4, some of the things that you would, you know, just come up with, it was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. She was practically more or less like cracking jokes with Kung Lao towards the end, and it's like, that's very, very different. Loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely not written to say, oh, you know, Amigis will, you know, you don't know if Amigis is going to, you know, want to kill Kung Lao or if she's going to kiss him. You know, none of that was written. It was just how they wrote it. And I just thought, oh, okay, I'm just going to be really, really very just, you know, off the cuff, and you're just not going to know what I'm going to say next. I mean, obviously, if I'm going to say something, you're just not going to know how, where it's coming from. You're not going to know if I'm, you know, feeling evil and, you know, at the moment, or if I'm feeling sexy and, you know, because obviously me just was this, you know, femme fatale as well as evil. And, but had, you know, heck of a sense of humor as well. You know, obviously she was has a very dry sense of humor, condescending at times. So I think that was what was really fun, being able to have that freedom to have that behind what I'm saying, you know, always just, okay, I'm crazy. I'm crazy.
Brilliant.
It was cool.
I know it's been a while since recording the show, but do you recall ever participating in a scene or filming anything that didn't actually make it into the final product?
Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot. You know, I mean, there was a lot more, I think, more fight scenes that we did that obviously, they would have to cut. They would have to cut because, you know, they can't just... We spent a lot of time, beautifully choreographed fight scenes. They spent a lot of effort with scene coordinators and choreographers. And I remember shooting a lot more of the action and the fighting and certain things like that that would have to be cut because they overshot to get, you know, a really concentrated killer fight scene, and they would overshoot that just to get, you know, whatever that is, 30 seconds, 1 minute. So yeah, I think it was a lot of that didn't make it in.
Yeah, they basically had a formula where it was 3 fights per episode. Now, coincidentally, with that number, you were in 3 episodes total.
Right.
The fight scene that we did see was in The Master, when you and Shang Tsung were fighting against Master Cho. But do you remember perhaps any footage that you had filmed with other characters that didn't make it in?
Let's see. No, I don't remember. I remember Christina Loken and Daniel. I remember and Paolo. We had like a scene where we were kind of together. Like there was a scene where we had more dialogue together that ended up getting much more condensed as well. I remember that.
Oh, was that from the final episode, Vengeance?
I think, yes. I believe it was Vengeance. Yes.
Yeah.
Where I just remember we shot more, you know, I just remember more. I mean, they were pretty good about, okay, this is, you know, let's do it. And then we would do a few takes, they would get it, and then we would move on. But I do remember, you know, them really focusing on the fight scenes and getting more than they needed, which was amazing. And then just the Vengeance episode where we definitely had more dialogue that probably got condensed once they started editing. Yeah,
there was quite a bit of dialogue in the scene where it was Kung Lao, Ciro, and you at the bonfire specifically, But later on, when you come towards that sort of cavern area, it did seem a little bit short. So I can definitely see that. I could definitely see an elaboration there.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Say, what are some of your favorite personality traits with Omegis? What is it that makes her character so unique in your eyes, though?
Oh, I just...
Her split personality?
Yes. You know that she had, like, four different people inside her brain. You know, like I always say, she's like the seductress, you know, the femme fatale, I call it, the seductress. Yet, she could be funny, like condescending funny, you know what I mean? She had a sense of humor, a condescending sense of humor. And then, like a killer, like in 1 second, you know, she could just rip your throat out. Yep. And then yet there's the conniving. There's then the more subtle, subdued, she's a conniving, you know, contemplating, just kind of, you know, just, yeah, conniving. That's such a great word for it. Conniving sorceress, you know, thinking of ways, how am I going to do this and how am I going to do it? And what's, you know, but then she could get lost in the moment of her anger and let her anger take her depending on, you know, whatever character she was, you know, having in the scene with, she could get carried away with it. But then there's also, you know, I love that they went back in time and showed the innocence before it all went bad. I thought that was amazing that they did that. There was such innocence and her wanting to really fall in love and have this pure relationship. I mean, I guess kind of as we all do, right? When we're in our teens and our 20s and we haven't been hurt yet and we're a little wet behind the ears and we fall in love easily and we want to see the good in everyone. And, you know, I guess definitely she had that before she became bitter and evil. Yeah. Was having that romantic, you know, fresh, young love with Kung Lao in the beginning.
Yeah, you know, the episode The Master is really an astonishing episode because, like you said, I love seeing the whole backstory, you know, seeing more of Omegis, of course, and of course how Sheng Tsung was once a good guy. And it was crazy to see that turn and the deep relationship that he had with Omegis, for sure.
Yeah, you know, it was like they were young and free and two crazy kids just, you know, being young and just falling in love and had the passion, of course, then. And then just to see how that can change. It's just, yeah. It was really cool that they went back in time to see that.
If you really had to think about it, what would you say is your favorite scene, the one that you're most proud of?
Oh my goodness. I would say it was the scene with Paulo. Yeah, when he comes to me for help. And I just go to him saying, what do you want? You know, young, beautiful. I forget exactly the dialogue, but I'm asking him, oh, pick your poison. What is it? What is it? What is it? I can be anything you want.
Yes.
That was definitely my favorite scene. Because I switch, you know, in a second. He does something to me that just sets me off and I just want to go, you know, for the juggler in that moment. I'm like, you came to me, you know, you came to me, you came here to my little shack in the woods. You know, what the hell do you want? What do you want? Like, you came here. That was my favorite scene. Yeah.
It was very well directed, written, and I just love the powerful performances in that scene. That was in Immortal Kombat episode 4. Wonderful. Yeah.
And I remember I don't even think we rehearsed, you know, most of that dialogue at first. So when I went to follow, I could see him like really going, oh my God, this chick is, she's crazy. What is she going to do? You know? So it was kind of cool. We didn't rehearse, you know, that. And I just kind of went like at his throat and I'm like, look, you came to me, you know? And he was just like, okay, yeah. What the heck was that? You know, he definitely didn't expect it, which was great. Cause you could see that in his face. Like really.
Well, literally. That's incredible, Angelica. So that part was literally improv then. Wow.
Well, yeah, we didn't rehearse. There were the lines, but I gave no indication that I was going to approach him or like act as if I'm going to strangle him or charge at him in any way. So yeah, no, we didn't rehearse that.
Did you happen to keep anything from your time working on the series, like your costume or any trinkets or anything like that?
Gosh, let's see. I just have, you know what I do have is I have photos from the set. Like when in between shooting, I have photos, and they're not that great, but oh my gosh. I was just looking at them the other day on my phone, and you know, they're kind of cloudy because it was the old, it was like those cameras sometimes that you would buy at a Rite Aid or something, the throwaway cameras, you know, and then you would take them, yep, and get the film developed. It was those kind of photos, and it was downtime, like in between fight scenes or in between scenes. And there, it's like me, Kung Lao, and I can't think, you'll know this actor. He is the bald, does a lot of the stunts. He does a lot. Went on to do other movies. I just saw him in a movie the other day. From the 80s, no, it was from the 90s, and I go, oh, that's the guy from Mortal Kombat, and we stayed in touch too. We have like a Facebook group, and we post our like photos from when we were on set to each other on this Facebook group. Did you guys know about that? No. Well,
no. Did he specifically just do stunts, or did he also play a character in the show?
Play a character. But he does a lot of stunts in these type of like martial art films. Like he's known for that. But he did have a role, I believe, in this one of these episodes. I'm gonna find the photo, and you'll be like, "Oh, that's so and so." I can remember his name.
Yeah, right? I'd love to.
It's driving me crazy.
I'd love to see.
Such a sweetheart.
Because originally, when you said bald actor, immediately I thought that's got to be Jeff Meek. Because he went completely bald to play Shao Kahn, and he did do some choreography and fight work on the final episode.
Right.
But yeah. I know John Medlin was very, very attached to the Conquest project, along with Annihilation.
Find this.
It's hard to say.
I know, right? It's going to drive me crazy. I miss Picture.
Well, there was On The Master, yeah, there was that Asian gentleman who had the fight scene with Bruce Locke. Would it be him?
I think so.
Oh, that's probably him then. Yeah, he's in like a lot of like,
yes,
90s,
yes,
movies
and like
stuff.
Literally 2 days ago, I was, yeah, watching some film and I said, oh, that's my Mortal Kombat co-star that was, you know, in one of the episodes. I remember him in Orlando. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I just can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Yeah.
He is
sadly, I can't lovely, either.
Lovely human. Lovely human. Gosh, I want to find these.
Very talented, though. Like, I've, yes, seen him in some other films on top of Conquest, yes, and he is just extravagant. It's unbelievable.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, that's one, what I did take from that show is I have some, you know, very few, mind you, very few, but cool photographs from being on set. And even with Bruce and I have like a photo with Bruce, you know, behind the scenes. It was behind the scenes stuff. That's, I just, I love it. And too bad we didn't have, you know, the phone in the 90s, like the phones we have now, where we could just be shooting, you know, so much. We would have the coolest behind the scenes. These sets were so elaborate. The sets that they built, I mean, so cool. So cool. And I would just have loved to have had more, like my phone behind going, oh, look, you know, I'm going to get this. But because we had these, you know, silly cameras and not such great technology, then, you know, I didn't get to come away from that show with a lot of photos or videos behind the scenes. But I would have loved to have had more. Yeah.
Do you have any other do you have any other fun stories working with Bruce Locke or Paolo Montalban on set?
Oh my goodness.
You definitely shared the most screen time with them. Yeah.
Yeah. It just we kept in touch even after the show for a while. He's like, again, these people are such great. You know, I don't know. Is it just me being a positive person, or are all these people really incredible to work with? I think they're pretty. Yeah, I'm positive.
It's a positive. It's an amazing cast.
These people were so amazing. I just honestly, Christina Loken on set, Christina Loken. I mean, just so giving, so kind, so just cool, kind. Daniel, Bruce, Paolo. I mean, honestly, when you go to work and you work with people like that, that are just amazing, it just makes, it just elevates everything even more so, you know? And I'm, you know, people have horror stories of working on TV shows with people and they're a nightmare and, oh my God, it was the worst thing ever. And, oh, it was just, you know, I had to just grin and bear it to get through, but not this show. And maybe that's a good kudos to Larry Kasanoff for bringing the right people and the right energy together. But it was pretty magical because everyone was, I never encountered any time of my time there. And each episode, it was several days per episode. So it's not like you just came in for a few days and you went out. When I was there for an episode, you know, it was several days or a week at least per episode. So it's not like in and out or quick or 1 or 2 days. So, you know, you get to spend time with the people on downtime when we weren't shooting. I think we would go to dinner together and just stuff like that. It was pretty magical. It was amazing. Great energy, great synergy of the cast. Yeah.
That's what I like to hear.
I know, right?
Yeah. So in that fight scene that we mentioned previously from episode 17, The Master, did you happen to do any of the hand or footwork in that particular scene?
A little bit, yes. So they had a great stunt person, which I wasn't sure how much I was going to do. You know, I didn't know. I mean, I knew they said, oh, we'll have a stunt person. But you never know, right? I mean, I've gone and they say, oh, you have a stunt person here. But if you want to do more, the director will let you, you know, usually let you do as much as you can do or want to do. Just, you know, some of just the turns and I probably as much like, some kicks and probably the back like on the floor and then pushing yourself and kind of springing off from the floor. And I forget what this move is called. But it's almost like a little crab springing to action from the floor.
Yeah,
doing that, and then I did as much as I could, right? And then you don't know what's going to be used until you see the episode. So then once I saw that, I was like, oh, and then I could tell the difference. Obviously, they put a wig on her that was similar to my hair color, the texture at the time, and then. Just seeing more of the advanced martial arts was the stunt woman. But I enjoyed doing as much as I could or can. Yeah, pretty magical to see it come together and how my stunt person just, you know, took it to a whole other level.
Absolutely.
Do you remember if it was Dana He who did stunts for you or a different?
She was blonde.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, she was blonde and then obviously put the wig on, but I remember her being blonde, I think, underneath. Do you know how many, did they tell you how many stunt people they had for the women? Was it they used the same ones?
There was a number of them, but I remember that when we had Dana He on the show, she said she did at least 6 to 8 different female combatants in the show.
Oh,
she said she kept pretty busy.
Gosh, it's amazing. Really amazing.
So, Angelica, if Conquest originally would have continued on after the first season, where would have you like to see your character go, you think? Would you like to see Omegis face her unfinished business with Shang Tsung, or maybe go in another direction and learn more about her venture into the dark arts?
Yeah, I think, oh my gosh, it'd be so amazing just to see her getting involved in so many different scenarios. Like, she would be the neighborhood witch, you know, that everyone would always go to for the potions and for the secrets, or they needed help with another character. That episode, I think that would be really incredible to be able to see her just be that neighborhood witch that everyone would go and consult.
There could be all kinds of stories there, yes.
Yeah, there could be. I mean, the sky's the limit, you know, when they would need her help, because there's so much of, you know, magic going on, obviously, behind, with every character in some way or some form throughout the episodes. So, yeah, she could definitely be, you know, that character that's intertwined with many different episodes and characters to either, you know, help them or she has some bone to pick with them, you know, just to see her having issues with, you know, just always having that tension with, you know, that character. Gosh, it would just be amazing to see these, you know, now arch enemies always battling, you know, with something. I think that would be really, really cool.
Yeah, and clearly Omegis did have enemies, because in the episode of Mortal Kombat, you know, she had her own bodyguards and things like this. So it'd be really interesting to hear what goes on in the background. And furthermore, I'd love to see her rise to power with her abilities far before she was cursed with immortality. You know, how did she get so good at what she does? Was she born that way? You know, there's so many different areas we could go to.
You could, yes. And just to see that transition from, you know, that 20s starry-eyed, talented, yet just kind of innocent at the same time, and then how that transgressed to her being completely, completely, you know, in the dark zone. Like, you know, there's so much you could see that transition, which would be pretty, pretty amazing to see that transpire. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, there was a portion of the show that contained old Omegis. Did you provide the voice for that, or was it dubbed over by a different actress?
No, that was dubbed over. Yeah, that was dubbed over. You know, by a voice actress. Yeah. And again, you know, something that I didn't see until I watched the episode, and then I was like, oh, wow, you know, the voice is so good. It's so creepy.
It was definitely eerie.
Yeah.
Many things happened during the finale episode, Vengeance. It would seem Omegis was happily embracing death at this point of time. Yet she continued to assist Earth's greatest champions. Amegis even had a nice big kiss with Daniel Bernhardt Zero. But ultimately, they had hinted at her imminent death due to a lurking Shadow Priest. One thing to note is that we've seen the character had a tattoo on her backside. It's hard to make out exactly what it is, but for the diehard fans, was this made specifically for the character, or was that actually the legitimate tattoo that was just incorporated into the show?
I believe that was my tattoo. The thing.
Oh, what? What is it?
Well, wait. Are you talking about the one on the lower back? Was yes. it on the lower? Yeah, that's mine.
Okay.
That's mine. Yeah. Yeah.
What is the tattoo exactly? Because it's hard to make out in 480p.
Right. It's, I'm a Scorpio, and of course in my 20s, silly girl, you know, like, oh, I want to get this tattoo of the scorpion sign. So it's not like actually a scorpion, the creature, the animal, it's the sign for Scorpio, that's tattooed back there.
So wow, it's like
an M with a dagger, kind of. It looks like an M with a dagger a little bit. Yeah. Mm.
And they incorporate it onto the show. Well, look at that.
That's pretty cool.
It's too good.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Conquest is also available now on HBO Max for streaming. And it's been a show that, despite its age, you know, the fans just stick around and they absolutely love it. So if there was a chance that the show could be greenlit for, say, like a new era to come in and, you know, continue on from that story or have some kind of connection to the past, and Amegis was a possible returning character, would you ever jump onto that bandwagon and, you know, pick it up again?
Oh, of course. Who wouldn't want to? I mean, I think people would be crazy not to want to go back and shoot more of that show. Like I said, like, the synergy was incredible. Larry Kasanoff is amazing to work with. I think all the cast and crew and just everything about it was so positive. And then just see the finished product, you know, who wouldn't want to go back and extend on their character on that show and continue? Yeah, it would be a dream come true.
So tell us more about some of your other work outside of the acting industry. You were involved in a pop music group called Strawberry Blonde. Started your own company and even have a producing credit. We'd love to hear more about what you have to offer, Angelica.
Well, I think after I did, after I did the acting, a lot of the acting roles that I had, I was kind of like, what can I do now that could be fun and exciting and challenge me? But as I had said earlier, you know, I came out to LA to be, to do acting and just get an entertainment. But my first break was obviously that contract for the singing group. So I ended up doing a show in Vegas where I headlined at the Luxor Hotel. It was called The Fantasy Show. And I was the lead singer, MC, billboard on the side of the Luxor, right next to Carrot Top's face was mine. So yeah, it was really on the top of taxis, you know, they have from the show. Like, it was really cool. I think I'd always wanted to do that and headline a show on the Las Vegas Strip. So that was something that, yeah, definitely, I was excited to do. And, it was a lot of fun. And I ended up having my own girls group, kind of a burlesque type of musical group that I put together that we traveled and toured around the U.S. As well after I headlined at the Luxor Hotel. So, yeah, there's been some cool projects.
I also seen you sing the national anthem there at, I believe it was NASCAR. That was incredible.
Oh,
very, very well done.
Oh, thank you.
That was something else. Seriously.
Thank you. No. Oh, you know, you got to try everything once.
You have a producing credit as well, correct?
I mean, I have several producing credits. I don't know if they're credited on even on IMDb though, but I love being behind the scenes. I love producing, and have done production and producing on different projects. You know, over the last, you know, this has been kind of recent actually, where I have done, yeah, several producing gigs. One was actually a show that I wrote and produced and acted in London in the UK, called Bake My Day. And I never finished editing it because COVID happened, you know, and I needed to go back to London and shoot and get more to fatten the show and to, you know, do it justice. But I spent, you know, like a month producing this show and traveling in the countryside of England. And yeah, it was quite magical. So definitely I will, now that, you know, everything's lifted, and I have not been back to London since pre-COVID. So I would love to go back and finish this show and get it edited and get it out there.
Yeah, that'd be really amazing to see. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
I also hear that you're quite the philanthropist and have a huge passion for animals. What are some of your experiences in this space? And is it true that you've also possibly mastered the art of Reiki?
Oh, how do you know that? Wow.
We do our research.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Not many people know that I have my master's in Reiki healing. It's just not something I, you know, throw out there usually, unless, you know, I know someone is open to, you know, learning more about, or they're into alternative healing, methods, or, are interested in energy work and using energy to heal. Yeah, so I do have that. It's just not, yeah, it's not something I really have spoken about. So it's cool that you know that. You've heard that.
Yeah.
Tell us about that journey and mastering that technique and some of the experiences you've had.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't really use it. You know, I'm not practicing it as a profession, obviously. But where I use it is with animals. I'm a huge, huge animal lover, and you know, when you said philanthropic aspirations that, yeah, I have is very much with animals and animal causes and animal charities and animal rescue. And I feel like the most Reiki that I've done is been with animals. Is healing animals, and any chance I get, if I feel that an animal that I ever encounter needs something, I love to do Reiki on animals.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah.
Now, what I also find most interesting is that you technically dabbled in the Batman world before with your work as Poison Ivy. In 2015, you were a part of the short film Batgirl Rises, which went on to win Best Movie Award in the Phoenix Comic-Con Film Festival. How was it working on this particular project?
Yeah, that was a really fun project as well. because you've got here another very spicy character in Poison Ivy, obviously. You know, I think I like these I like these spicy characters. I like these female characters that are powerful. Yeah, that are powerful and just, you know, go after what they want. I tend to, you know, I'm drawn to these type of characters. I think there's like a pattern here that I'm kind of seeing right now as I'm thinking about it, that very much attracts me to characters like this, like a Amegis and a Poison Ivy. And then I did Red Sonja in the TV series for Conan the Barbarian. I played Red Sonja. And again, you know, a very alpha female type of character. So I think that's kind of my hot spot there is powerful females that know what they want and alpha and complex. Yeah, I like it.
Gotta love it. So, Angelica, we're now going to switch things up a little bit, and we're going to head to the last segment of the show, and which we call
Final Round.
So what we're going to do in this final round is we're going to ask you some quick questions, try to get to know you a little more. So the first question being, what is your favorite color?
Blue,
ah. What's one of the funniest things that has ever happened to you or something you'll never forget?
Oh my gosh. I have so many. Probably when I drank too much, and I don't drink. So I guess it was my 20s, right? That's probably why I was such a lightweight. But I went to Kevin Costner's house for a party. There was like 25 to 30 people. And Kettle One, which I could never drink to this day, they were doing, pouring shots. Oh, and I drank too much Kettle One. I couldn't even, like, I just wanted to lay down and sleep, right? So I just went down to find a place to kind of get away from everyone at this party. And I remember I walked down into the movie theater and I just, these big, couches, not necessarily movie chairs, but like more couches in his theater. And I just remember finding a spot, laying down and just going to sleep, right? That's all I wanted to do. I couldn't even function. And the next morning, waking up and, you know, going, oh my God, where am I? And I look up and there's Oscar. I don't know how many Oscars. It looked like a lot of Oscars. I don't know. I didn't count. I just remember, you know, this cabinet in front of me when I woke up, just cabinet right there with Oscars. And I'm just like, oh my God. And oh, I just got the heck out of there. I was like, oh, and I can't drink Kettle One to this day.
Wow.
It seems everyone has some horror story with a certain alcoholic beverage. You know, it's true. Like, there's one that you can't drink anymore.
No. Yeah. I don't drink. I just don't. That's probably why, because of, you know, I'm sure that, like, it wounded me from that night.
Angelica, what is your favorite movie to watch?
I love Gone with the Wind, I think, is the one that I never get tired of. It's so long, but I love that movie. The way that it was shot, the acting, the storyline. Oh, it just takes me to another place. I would definitely say, you know, I have a lot of favorite movies, but that's one that always gets me.
Very nice. Best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, goodness. I love the Maya Angelou quote. It's something to the effect of people will forget what you say, people may forget what you do, but they never forget the way you make them feel. So I'm off on the exact quote, but that's a little roundabout of what it says. Is basically, it's not so much what you're going to say or do in life. It's kind of like what the energy that you, it doesn't lie. Your energy doesn't lie. So I think that other people will always remember if you go on and and you pass on someday, and you have people that remembered you when you were living, they don't forget how you made them feel. And I always carry that with me more than anything.
Man, very powerful.
Nicely said.
Yeah. What are some of your hobbies?
Oh my goodness, I love baking. I love, yeah, baking and cooking. I'm such a foodie, a big time foodie. I love to go hiking. I love to do anything with animals, charities of rescue. I have 7 pets. I have 2 rabbits, 3 cats, and 2 dogs.
Wow.
So that
Ooh.
keeps me very busy, yes, is spending time with my animals.
Very nice. What is the worst gift you've ever received?
The worst gift?
Hmm.
Oh my, let's see. That's a good. See, I'm always trying to find the good in everything, so I never see it as like bad. I always find something good.
Yeah.
So that's why it's hard for me to remember like something really bad.
Or just like, yeah, something very strange, unexpected, I guess.
Oh boy, gosh. I'm trying to remember. What is something strange or unexpected?
Just a pair of ugly socks or something.
Oh. Let's see. Oh, God, isn't this terrible that I can't think of one bad gift?
Okay, you know
I'm
what? Let let's
ridiculous.
change the
Let's
question.
be
Let's
out.
change the question.
Okay.
What was your strangest fan encounter? Do you have one for that?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that first job that I did in like when we went to China, went to Shanghai. The first job I did was backup singer, right? For the group. And we went and performed for the Shanghai TV Festival, which is like almost like the Grammy Awards, for us in the US, but in China. And going to China, and sometimes we, in Beijing, there were 20,000 people sometimes at these shows. There was a lot of people, like the University of Beijing would come and watch our shows. So it was always a lot, it was always a lot of people when we performed. These weren't like small shows. They're like, oh, the Americans are coming, So I remember coming, if you're leaving stage and you're going into the tunnel, people, they'd never, most, I think these people never saw my hair color. And, now it's gotten a lot more strawberry copper kind of, but at the time I think it was a lot more like my 20s, no, 18, 19. It was red. It was like very, very red, right? It was more fiery. And they'd
Yeah.
never seen this color. So they were pulling my hair. They were reaching over
Oh,
and
wow.
pulling it out. Like they couldn't believe it. So this was happening, getting my hair pulled from above as we were trying to run through the tunnels at the end of the show. So then they started putting guards with me because, It was the hair. They weren't doing it to the other people. They were doing it to me because they never seen, you know, I was like this alien or something. So wow. I'll never forget that. Jeez. I'll never forget that. Yeah.
Wow. It's incredible.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. When you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a movie star like Ginger Grant on Gilligan's Island.
Any dream came true, right?
Yeah. That's right.
In a way, yeah, with different roles, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
With different roles and characters, I kind of got to be my own Ginger. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And final question. If you could have any superpower for one day, what would you choose and why?
Oh, boy. I think I would choose. Well, I definitely wouldn't want to be invisible. That's boring. I wouldn't want to read minds because I wouldn't want to know what people are saying. I would be overstimulated. I don't know. I don't know, honestly.
Maybe something related to Reiki, like healing or...
In the future, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously to have a superpower that would be like Wonder Woman or something to, I guess something like that. Everything else seems so boring to me. Invisibility or being minds. It's like, no, that's so boring. Who wants to know any of that or do that? But I think definitely being that superheroine in a way that I could save lives or rescue or have a superpower to combat evil. I mean, that I'm all for that. That's definitely up my alley. Yes.
For sure.
Well, Angelica, thank you so much for joining us today. It really is an honor to have you. I'm a huge fan of your work. MK Conquest means everything to me, so it's been a real
pleasure. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, and that's it for today, my friends. We hope you thoroughly enjoyed the interview and learned something new today. I've seen an exceptional amount of fanfic on the internet regarding Omegis, and I think she easily has some of the highest potential to be successful if she was brought forward in the video games. Be sure to follow Angelica on her social media platforms for any updates on recent projects and generally to see what's going on. For any listeners today, we have the social media links attached to the show notes. We have a lot more coming up, but we are most curious. Who from the MK Conquest show would you like to see on Kamidogu? Let us know in the comments. It's always fun chatting with you guys. Until next time, have fun, stay safe, and
stay flawless.